begins to defile again, Sankilesa. So these are the steps. First, Dhanakata, Silakata, Saggakata, Kamanang Asada, Adinava, Okara, Sankilesa. 8 steps. Dhanakata, Silakata, Saggakata, Kamanang Asada, Adinava, Okara, Sankilesa. 7. Step 7. Sankilesa means defiling state. Now, Buddha was giving these instructions and seeing his mind is working according to these instructions. Because this man is paying total attention to the Buddha's teaching. When he pays total attention to the teaching and listens, Buddha can see the way how his mind is slowly changing. Then Buddha gave another very beautiful step. That is, nekkham mecha anisanse. Advantage and benefit of renunciation. And when the Buddha gave that instructions, Upali's mind was ready. That is called Kalla Chittang. Nekhame Chansanse. Then his mind was ready. Kalla means suitable. He was ready. Then his mind becomes soft, mudu chittam. And when the mind is soft, then it became free from hindrances, vinivarna chittam. That means he has not attained jhanas. And yet, as the mind becomes soft and gentle, the mind becomes free from hindrances, vinivarna chittam. When his mind becomes confident, when the mind becomes free from hindrances, his mind has build up confidence in the Buddha's step, the teaching, the steps method. That's called Pasanna Chittam. Pasanna Chittam. Then, when the mind is pleased, has trust, faith in the Buddha's teaching, then the Buddha gave him something that is particular to Buddhas. That's called Buddhanam Samukkhamsa Desanam. So he prepared his mind. When it came to that state where his trust, faith is well established, then Buddha gave his special teaching called Buddhanam Samukkhamsa Desanam, the special teaching to Buddhas. What is the Buddha's very special teaching? Four Noble Truth. That's the Buddha's very special. Nobody has taught Four Noble Truth. Only the Buddha has taught it. All other things, anybody can teach. But the Buddha's special teaching is Four Noble Truth. So seeing the mind's development of this man's mind, when the right moment came, he gave the right dosage. Right instructions for Noble Truth. Then, Upali has already accepted Buddha as his teacher and took his refuge. And then he began to follow these steps. The faith arose in him, then there are other steps. As we say, okay, when he took the refuge in the Buddha and listened to them and I heard the Four Noble Truths, as soon as he heard the Four Noble Truths, this special knowledge arose in Upari's mind. And that knowledge arose in Venerable Kondanya's mind, Venerable Sariputta's mind, Venerable, then this Upali's mind. The statement they made at the end of listening to the Four Noble Truths is exactly the same statement. Venerable Kondanya said, Yang kinchi samudaya dhammang sabbantang niroddhammang. All that is subject to arise, is subject to pass away. With this understanding, there arose this kind of state of mind in Upali's mind. What are they? Upali became, or got this qualification, so to say. He saw the Dhamma. This is called Ditta Dhamma. Ditta Dhammo. Ditta Dhamma, we use the word Ditta Dhamma, realizing in this very life. In Kamma we call Ditta Dhamma Vedaniya Kamma. Realizing in this very life. That means you see it here and now. That's what happened to Upali. Ditta Dhamma. Then he attained the Dhamma, Patta Dhamma. He understood the Dhamma, Vidita Dhamma. That means he penetrated the Dhamma. Then he fathomed the Dhamma. That's called Pariyogala Dhamma. Then he crossed over all doubts. That is called Tinna Vichikicho. Vichikicha means doubt. Tinna means crossed. Gone beyond doubt. That means no more doubt. Then did away with perplexity. Vigata Katang Kati. Katang Kati means to do or not to do. That's the question. That means you don't know what to do. You are not totally clear. So he is gone beyond that. That's called gone beyond perplexity. Katang Kati. And then again, intrepidity. That's called Vesarajya Patta. That means you became above ordinary people. That's called Vesarajya Patta. Katang, intrepidity, and became independent of others in the teachings of the Dhamma, in the teachings of the Buddha's dispensation. And that is called Aparapachayo Sattu Sasane. Aparapachaya, apara means others, pachaya means cause, Sattu Sasane means Buddha's dispensation. That means he does not have to depend on others to understand the Dhamma. That means he understands the Dhamma by himself. He comes to that level because he has gone beyond all doubt, and everything now left for him is to go on and do more and more investigation, checking out, and getting more and more clarity in the Dhamma, without asking anybody to explain the Dhamma to him. That's called Aparapachayo Sattu Sasane. Then, when he is gone to this attain to this stage, thus he attained the what we call stream entry. Destroying three fetters: doubt, attachment to rites and rituals, and belief in the concept of soul or self. And nobody else knew this. Only the Buddha and Upali knew this. There must have been other people in the crowd at this discussion, but nobody knew that. Only the Buddha and Upali knew this. So that is why we recite Yocha Buddhancha Dhammancha Sanghancha Saranangato Chattari Arya Satchani Sammappanyaya Pasati Dukkhan Dukkha Samuppadan Dukkhasa Chattittamang Ariyancha Tangikam Maggan Dukkhup Samagaminang Etanko Saranang Kemang Etan Saranamuttamang Etan Saranang Agamma Sabba Dukkha Pamuchati. This is a very important statement. When true Dhamma knowledge arose, you take refuge in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and from that time onward, your path is perfectly clear and no doubt. I think... So he became Ditta Dhamma, Patta Dhamma, Paryoga Vidita Dhamma, Paryolgala Dhamma, Thinna Vichikicca, Vigata Katankati, Vesa Raja Patta, Aparapaccho Buddha Sattu Sasani. So when Upali returned home, having been converted to Buddha's dispensation, Diga Tapasi went to Nigandanatha Putta and said, "That is what I told you. I told you not to let him go. This Bhavad Gautama has his avartani maya, converting people into his dispensation. And he used it. I told you. Now we lost a very, very important pillar of our support, sect. He is a pillar, and we lost him." Nigandanatha Putta never believed it. So when Upali returned, he said to the doorkeeper or gatekeeper, "Good doorkeeper, from today on, I close my door to Nigandanatha Putta and open my door to the Buddha, Bhikkhu Sangha, Bhikkhuni Sangha, and men lay followers, women lay followers of the Buddha. If any Nigantas come, then tell him, thus, wait, Venerable Sir, do not enter. From today on, householder Upali has gone over to discipleship under the recluse Gautama. He has closed his door to the Niganta, and if you need alms, wait here." So, you can read the rest. Was a disaster to Nigandanatha Putta, and his disciples also were very upset with Nigandanatha Putta, and Upali went on praising the Buddha. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, everything originates in the mind, but if, let's say, I have the thought to do harm to someone, but I restrain that thought and I don't act on it, then does it still create karma? Because, I mean, everything what we bring into reality, I mean, originates anyway in the mind. So is then not that what we bring into reality that what creates the karma? Because, I mean, we have here all at times negative thoughts without acting on them. I mean, thoughts are coming sometimes also uncontrolled in our mind. I mean, I see that the mind is stronger, mind over matter than material world, but my question is, if every thought necessarily already induces karma?
Now, certain karmas, not certain, all the karmas have to be executed through words and deeds in order to yield their full results. Certain other karmas, like wrong view, we hold wrong view as long as we hold wrong view and do not do anything about it. When we are taken rebirth, we will be reborn with confused state of mind, maybe even as a human beings, but since we did not execute that wrong view, there will not be any other repercussions. But if you use that wrong view to speak, to do things, and convert others into that, then you will commit a very serious, unwholesome karma. Similarly, when you have anger in your mind, you don't do anything. You don't use any words to use your anger. You don't do your body to execute your anger. But you have anger. You die, in the next life, you will be very unpleasant. You will be very unhappy, and so forth. Beyond that, nothing will happen, because you have not executed that hatred. Similarly, if you die with greed, and you don't do anything, you have the greed, but you don't try to grab others' things, don't try to say things with greed and so forth, you simply have greed. And next life, you will be poor, not having too many friends, you will be disappointed, be lonely, because you don't have any company sharing. When we become generous, we make friends. Dānaṁ mitte, dānena mittaṁ gantheti. Buddha said, when we practice generosity, we collect friends. And that we will not have it. That kind of state we don't have, that means no friends, we can remain alone. So, in the mental, in the mind, these things are there, therefore there is a certain amount of result. But when you put them into action, then there will be more. It's the same with the wholesome state. You have a thought of generosity, but you don't do anything about it. In the next life, you will be comfortable, you will be happy, but you don't have anything extra. You'll be happy, but you don't gain much materially, and you don't gain deep concentrated state of mind, because you did not put it into practice. You just kept it in your mind. Similarly, metta. You practice metta, friendliness. You feel friendly, but you did not put it into words and deeds. And therefore the results will not be very great, but still you have a wholesome mental state in the next life. So, the roots, as long as the roots are there, you will have some results. But when you put the roots into function, and you express it through your words and deeds, then results will be greater.
You said that in Buddhist practice, this kind of mind, the evil effects are the result is not that, but Devadatta did.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he lost all his powers later.
Yeah.
So we also have our own people who are doing that kind of thing.
Yeah, Devadatta. Yeah, you are right. Devadatta not only had evil thoughts, but he executed, he put those evil thoughts into action. That is why he lost all his powers.
Supposing he had not died, he wouldn't have lost.
He would have not lost all his powers if he did not do anything. Because it is possible when hindrances like greed is a hindrance, hatred is a hindrance. It can be subsided when you attain jhanas, and when that particular hindrance arises, you lose jhana. But again, you can attain it because you did not do anything about it. I mean, adversely, you just realize that it came, and you become mindful of it. And then let it go, then you can reattain it. If Devadatta did that, he would have not lost all his powers.
Goes to another sect, James or someone else, and says, I want to follow that teacher. Did they also use the word go for refuge, or is that idea specific to Buddhism? Would they say, I go to refuge from Jain, or I go to refuge from another teacher, or is that only used?
Right, then you lose the refuge in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, because you have to deny the Buddha to go to somebody else. That means you have not deeply established in the Buddha's Dhamma. So when you are on the shaky ground, it is very easy for you to lose the touch with the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. So when you go there, you automatically, not automatically actually, you deliberately lost your previous status. And that is why there's also a very good question that relate to another part of the Buddha's teaching, that until you attain the stream entry, you are not sure what will happen to your mind.
You could slide back.
Yeah, you will slide back. Yes.
Yeah. I think his question was saying whether they use the same formula of I go to the refugee to the Buddha, whether the other sects use the same formula, refugee to the Dhamma, refugee to the Sangha.
In other traditions, do they have similar formula?
Yes.
They say refuge under another teacher.
Okay.
refugee to Jesus, I got the refugee to the Holy Spirit, something like that.
I think they might have formulated something like that. I trust in so and so, I accept so and so as my supreme being and so forth. They may have, but we have not come across such things in other traditions. There may be, but I'm not 100% familiar with everything that they have. But they may have something. However, even if you do not verbalize your allegiance to those traditions, in mind you accept them and they accept you and you follow the tradition. In Buddhist tradition, only in Buddhist tradition we find the formula that you got to repeat verbally out loud so that there is no question in the mind of anybody, that you said it in words three times, then you made the commitment. In other tradition there may not be something like that. But yet in your mind you abandon this previous training and you go to them.
Refuge is such a beautiful term because it implies the protection that comes from sila, is protecting me against harm,
mm-hmm.
and also protecting against unwholesome karma by following that.
That's definite.
Protection, safety.
Mm-hmm. And that is why it is called refuge. As I said, refuge, we use these days refugees. What they do when they go for refugee camps and so forth, they expect food, lodging, medicine, and protection, and other necessary things, material things. Spiritually, when we take refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, we also have protection against evil deeds, evil thoughts, evil words, and falling back into evil behavior, and then we are protected from those things because we have anchored our trust in the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and stay away from all those unwholesome things. That way the Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha protects us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This man became a very important disciple of the Buddha, to that end, so quickly.
Yeah, this disciple is not anything particularly more important than others, because his name is not mentioned in, in Anguttara Nikaya there is a list of individuals who have recognized by the Buddha as the very distinguished persons. That's called Etadagga Pali in the first chapter of Anguttara Nikaya. I think this Upali's name is not there, but the other Upali whose name I mentioned earlier is there. Because he was recognized by the Buddha as an expert in Vinaya. Upali, this Upali, does not have particular distinction to be recognized as a very special person. This is the normal thing. You know, like Supabuddha also was a beggar, and he attained the enlightenment exactly the same way. But he is not also mentioned as anything special. Because many, many, many people attain enlightenment like this, I mean first stage of enlightenment. In Upali Sutta, what is important thing is that the Buddha asked Upali not to accept things. That is why I use this just after Kalama Sutta. In the Kalama Sutta we mentioned not to accept things due to such and such reasons. Upali is an example. Upali Sutta is an example. Even there, Buddha asked Upali not to rush, but wait. And that is the special thing in the Sutta. That is why I selected that after Kalama Sutta.
One important thing happened after Upali. One important thing happened. Nigandhanatha Buddha died.
Nigandhanatha Buddha dies anyway. Whether he became Buddha's disciple or not. Even the devadatta dying. We should not be happy for his death. Yeah.
It's my understanding that as the young Buddha left his family and went out to become an ascetic and studied with a variety of meditation masters of the time and place, is it known what who he studied with? For example, the Nagantas, would that have been one that he turned to?
Siddhartha did not learn under Nigantanatha Buddha. He learned under two famous teachers, and there was another one, Vishwamitra, which is not mentioned in Pali tradition. It is mentioned in Mahayana or Lalita Vistara and Sarvastivadi school. They mention this name, Vishwamitra. But Kalama, Alarakarama, Uddhakaramputta are the two famous teachers under whom Siddhartha Gautama learned. The last two stages of attaining the immaterial jhanas. From Alarakarama he learned the way to attain nothingness. Uddhakaramputta he learned the way to attain neither perception nor non-perception. And other things he learned on his own by himself. But out of curiosity, he went to these two teachers to find out what they have to teach him. But finally he found what they taught was also very, not very important.
What those teachers then felt about him? I mean, did any of them turn to him and become a disciple?
Yes, those two teachers acknowledged Siddhartha's genius nature and put him on the same level as they were and asked him to share teaching with them. Each of them told Siddhartha Gautama Bodhisattva, you know what I know what you know. Therefore, take some of my students and share my teaching. And Siddhartha Bodhisattva felt, he said, I am honored, sir, thank you very much. I am honored for recognizing me and putting me at your level. But I have to go. He went on his own way. But they recognized his achievement.
And then we studied those two sutras at the last sutra study. Can you give her the name of those sutras or the number of those sutras so she can read that?
In Arya Pariyasana Sutta, you can see it in this book. Yeah. Sutta number 9, I think. No, that is Samadhi Sutta. Arya Pariyasana Sutta. Arya Pariyasana Sutta 26.
And the other one is 2.
The other one, Vishwamitra, is not mentioned in Theravada tradition. You can find perhaps in Mahavastu. Mahavastu is in our library. Mahavastu. Or Lalita Vistara. Lalita Vistara we may not have in our library. That is Sanskrit text. In this text you can find the name of Vishwamitra. In one discourse those two names are there. Alara Kārāma Uddhaka Rāmaputta. Both names you can find there in this particular discourse, Arya Pariyasana Sutta.
But when those teachers offered their disciples to Siddhartha, please teach some of my followers, this is still before Bodhgaya and the night under the Bodhi tree.
Mm-hmm.
So I think part of the question is, after the Buddha's enlightenment, was there any contact between him and his earlier teachers after he was fully enlightened?
No, actually he wanted to teach. He wanted to contact Alaraka, Ramakrishna, Uddhaka, Rama, Buddha, but unfortunately both of them had passed away. Therefore, he could not contact. He wanted to contact them, but they had all passed away.
One had died just the night before.
Yeah.
One had died just the night before.
I have one more question on a slightly different vein. I have several friends who are of the Hindu faith, and I've had discussions with them, and their overwhelming opinion is that the Buddha was an avatar of Vishnu.
I think avatar means reincarnation of Vishnu. And this whole concept is called Purana, Purana literature. There's one section, one chapter called Vishnu Purana. In that chapter, they attribute this state to the Buddha. There are 10 avatars in the Purana literature, and this whole Purana tradition started much later, or after the Buddha's passing away, and therefore they might have fabricated these stories with good intention. Because Hindus are very friendly with Buddhists, because many Hindu terms, Vedic terms, are used by the Buddha. In Buddhist tradition, Buddha used. And also, many of his disciples came from Vedic tradition, Brahmins. Many of the Buddha's disciples were Brahmins. Mahakasapa was Brahmin, Sariputta was Brahmin, Moggallana was Brahmin, and so forth. Many disciples of the Buddha were Brahmins. So, Hindu also believed in karma, rebirth, and so forth. And therefore they are friendly. In order, as you know, in Hinduism, Hinduism is a later ism. It was not, there was no ism in the, as Hinduism before the Buddha. The what they had was Veda, and Buddha referred to three Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Sama, and the other Veda, Atharva Veda, also was composed after the Buddha's passing away. So Buddha always used the word Tiveda, Tiveda Parang Gato, and so forth. The word Hinduism is a term they use for Indus Valley civilization, in which you can find everything. Mahatma Gandhi formed a very holistic poem, chanting, he said there, Ishvara Allah Tere Dham Sabbako Sanmati De Bhagavan. Ishvara, Allah is a Muslim, and Jesus Christ, all are included in later Hinduism. And no matter what religious tradition comes into existence, they incorporate it into Hinduism to be very friendly with everybody. And this, therefore, since the Buddha gave recognition to India, it was the Buddhism that actually brought prestige, honor, respect to India, not Hinduism. Because Buddhism spread all over the world and made India known to the world through Buddhism. And that is why when India got independence, when they wanted to decide on the flag, an emblem for the flag. Different people came up with different ideas. Some said, let us have the wheel or the spinning wheel that Gandhi used. But Pandit Nehru said, no. It was the Buddha who brought honor and respect to our country, and therefore let us use the Buddha symbol, which we find in Ashoka Chakra, Dharmashoka Chakra. So today in Indian flag, what we find is Dhamma Chakra, the wheel of Dhamma. No, even Buddhist countries don't have wheel of Dhamma, but India has wheel of Dhamma on their flag. So they have a tremendous respect for Buddhism, and therefore easily brought the Buddha under the names of these 10 incarnations or avatars. So, we are friendly after all, no problem. Okay.